Pat and I'm an alcoholic. Grateful to be sober, grateful to be here. Billy, is this all right or what? Is this good? It's good. You can't hear? You want me to start over? My name is Pat and I'm an alcoholic. Grateful to be sober, grateful to be here. You guys hear that echo too? And I don't know if anyone knows what dubstep music is, but it's like bow, wow, wow, you know? And all right, I'm going to do this. And thanks for asking me 3 years ago or whatever it was to participate in my recovery. You know, I remember when I was brand new, they told me be ready to be divinely inconvenienced. You know what I mean? And, you know, I said yes. I was taught that any time I'm asked to do anything in Alcoholics Anonymous, just to say yes. And I remember asking an old-timer one time, John Ackerlin was my favorite old-timer in my home group, and I was like, why do I got to say yes? He's like, because that's where God wants you to be. Well, 3 years ago, God wanted me here, and then whatever happened to the world, you know, and I just kept saying yes, and here I am, and I'm glad to be here, and pretty soon I'll be too far back, and I have a good life as a direct result of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, and I have a love affair for Alcoholics Anonymous. My love affair for Alcoholics Anonymous grows more and more every day, I'll tell you. Like, I was just driving here today. I left Orange County at, like, I thought I should leave at 2:30 to get here on time. But because of whatever happened that was out of my control, we left at 4:30, and I knew for sure I was going to be late. You know what I mean? I was like, we're going to get there at 8:10. I know I'm going to walk in. Everyone's going to throw tomatoes at me. You know, loser, you know? And I don't know what's like for you, right? But I go to worst case scenario, like, you know what I mean, right away, you know? And then I quickly prayed. I quickly said a prayer, and we made it here in like an hour and 50 minutes, you know? And, you know, I don't know if God's on my side today or what, but it's good. I'm glad. My son and his friend are guarding our bikes out in the parking lot, you know? So thanks for coming, guys. My son's like, I've heard you like 400 times. I'm not going to hear you again, you know? You know, and we were trying to get his friend to come, but he's like, I don't want to go to AA, you know? I'm like, I relate. I didn't want to go to AA either, you know? And, you know, I'm grateful to be here. Thanks, Fred, for charging along. It's funny, I come in, you know, nervous, and I go, let's say a prayer. And so we say a prayer, and then I'm like, what story should I tell? You know, here I am controlling it again, you know? And why don't I just let go and let God talk through me tonight, you know? And I don't know if we have any new friends. My sobriety date's October 23rd, 2002. I really didn't even plan on staying sober 19 minutes, let alone 19 years. And I didn't know that I was going to stay here that long. I think if I'd have known I was going to stay here 19 years, I'd have probably taken another drink, you know? And, you know, you know, we all know, right? If I did, I probably wouldn't have made it. But I didn't plan on it. I didn't know that was going to be my sobriety date. I called my mom and asked for help because I wanted $20 more, really, you know? You know, my mom was 27 years sober at the time, or 26 years sober at the time, and she had been telling me no for a long time, right? I'd call her and be like, I need money, you know? And she's like, no, you know, because she found Al-Anon, you know? And I think she always knew about it, but she started to apply the things, you know? And 6 years before, she didn't apply the things, you know? And but I went to rehab, and then we did, like, that family, you know? Yeah, I don't know if you ever did the family thing at rehab, and you have to stand knee-to-knee and talk about your hurts, you know? And then she's like, they're like, you need to go to Al-Anon. And so she went to Al-Anon, and I would call, and I was like, Mom, I need money. And she's like, no. I'm like, no? She's like, yeah, no's a full sentence, you know? And I was like... And I'm like, well, Mom, if you wouldn't have kicked me out of the house, I wouldn't be in this situation. And I'd hit that guilt button, and my mom would go wire me the money, you know? And, you know, and I would call again, and I would say, Mom, you know, I got, you know, I need, you know, whatever the thing was, I need money. And she's like, you know, no, I'm going to set a boundary, you know? I'm like, a what? She's like, a boundary, you know? I don't know about you, but I'm like a bulldozer, you know what I mean? I'm like, Mom, if I only had a dad, I wouldn't be in this situation, you know? Oh. Dude, hit that guilt button. She'd be like, oh, you know, wire me the money, you know? But that day when I called my mom that morning, I called her, I was like, you know, I need some money. And she's like, no, you need to go to AA. Now, my mom had said that to me a lot of times. You need to go to AA, right? And I went to AA for a long time. I come to Alcoholics Anonymous, and, you know, I sit in the back. I'm brand new, you know, and they'd be like, are there any alcohol or any newcomers here? And I was like, I guess that's me, you know. And so I raise my hand, and they, you know, point around, and they point to me, and I'm like, my name is Pat, and I'm an addict. Oh, don't do that in AA, right? You're like, oh, dude, you know what I'm saying? Everyone turns around. They're like, there's an addict in our room. Yeah. Let's get him out of here. You know, he's gonna dirty AA, you know? And I stand up, and I'm like, I want to piss off the old guy, you know? And I leave AA, and I slam the door because I want you guys to know how pissed off I am, you know? And no one ever followed angry guy out and like, hey, angry guy, you know. You know, here's a big book, you know, why don't you take this home or to the bush or wherever you're living, and read it. Maybe you might identify with alcoholism, right? Like, I can tell you I was dying of alcoholism not knowing what I was dying from, right? And how do we expect the new guy to know what he's dying from? And so I'd go out there and I'd die and I'd come back to AA, and they're like, are any newcomers? I'm like, I'm not going doing that judgmental game again, you know? You know, and I leave AA, and I go out there, and I die. And then I would come back to AA long enough that I would hear, like, the alcoholic anda, you know what I'm saying? I'm like, I can get down with the anda, you know? And so I raise my hand. I'm like, you know, they didn't even call me that time. I'm like, geez, how rude, you know? I come back and I go in and out of AA, not knowing what alcoholism is, not knowing what I'm dying of. And so I come here, I go, and the newcomers, my name is Pat, I'm an alcoholic and an addict. And then some guy's, ah, ha, ha, put $2 in the basket. Some are sicker than others, you know. You know, look at the stupid newcomer in the back who doesn't, right? And I flip you guys off, and I want you to know how angry I am, and I slam the door for effect. And no one ever follows angry guy out and go, hi, my name is Bob. Want to go to Polly's Pies? Let me tell you my story, you know. And I go out there and I die. And, I'm so grateful for the responsibility statement in Alcoholics Anonymous. And if you're new, the responsibility statement says, when anyone anywhere reaches out for help, we want the hand of AA to be there. And for that, I'm responsible, right? There's no like judgment in that responsibility statement, you know. When the new man walks in that door, right, like I have a responsibility to put my hand out to that new man and take him from the blank page of the big book to page 43 and identify my alcoholism. And if that new man's alcoholism might wake up in the process of me telling my story. And if that new man is an alcoholic, then we have a solution here in Alcoholics Anonymous for that person. But it's still my responsibility that if that new man isn't an alcoholic, that I have enough relationships and other fellowships that I can take his hand and put it into the hand of a member of another fellowship. Not just write down a number, oh, here's NA, you know, see ya. because God brought him here. And what happened for me on October 23rd, 2002, that day when I called my mom and I said, Mom, I need help. My mom said, I can't help you anymore, right? She said, just stay where you are and someone from Alcoholics Anonymous will come and get you. She says, if I come and get you, I'm going to end up killing you. And she hung up on me. And my mom called every high-profile old-timer in Alcoholics Anonymous to help her kid. You know what I mean? She wanted the best of the best to help her kid, you know? And none of them answered the phone. But the guy that answered the phone, man, he had a year sober. He had just got off the phone with his doctor who told him he had 4-stage cancer and he had about 6 months to live. And he hung up the phone, and the phone rang immediately, and it was my mom saying, I need help with my son. My son's dying of alcoholism in a motel in Anaheim, and I need help. And the guy on the other end of the line said, where's he at? Right? He didn't say, have the kid call me. He said, where's he at? And my mom gave him the address, and he got in his van because he knew if he didn't treat his alcoholism, he was not going to make it the 6 months that the doctor told him that he had to live. And he went and picked up a new guy, and that new guy got in the car, right, got in the van, and they drove down to that motel to do a 12-step call. And, I was 98 pounds. I hadn't showered in 6 months. I came off of Skid Row. I'd been living there for a year and a half, 2 years-ish. I had 2 shoes, only one had a sole. I saw the devil and his troops. They followed me wherever I went. I heard voices in my head. They told me where to go, who to do things to. I had a stolen beach cruiser. The only solution I could create to get the devil and his troops away from me, I had this stolen beach cruiser, and I found these sticks about this long, and I twined them like a cross in the handlebars on my bike, and I rolled around Skid Row like that, you know what I mean? Right? In the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says our alcoholic life seems the only normal one. And I don't know that I'm living any different than the fellas that I'm hanging out with. You know, I had a line in the, I had a line that I drew in the sand, and it was like, man, if I have to push a shopping cart, then I'll get sober. You know what I mean? Now, I had two shoes, only one had a sole, and I had a friend who had a shopping cart, so I put my things in his cart. You know what I mean? And those guys got to that motel that day. They didn't even knock. Oh, we're here from AA. They just barged right in. The guy's like, my name's Jack. I'm an alcoholic. You know what I mean? He had big hair. He was like, you know, wired up. You know, he was on fire for Alcoholics Anonymous. You know? He had a big book in his hand. And this other guy was on a walker. He's like, my name's John. I got 90 days sober. You know, and I'm like, Jesus, losers. You know what I mean? Fucking these guys are kooks. You know what I mean? I mean, there's some cool guys up here. I see some, you know what I mean? Couldn't you send some, like, cool guys, you know? And now, I didn't believe in God for 10 years till I got 10 years sober, right? But I know tonight that when I reached out and asked my mom for help, God heard that prayer. God heard that prayer. There was no, I need help and here's a plan. I need help and had no other idea. And that guy walked in that room that day, introduced himself, and he said, come with me, kid. And I got off the bed, and I followed that guy out of that motel, and he said, just get in the van, kid. And I got in the van. And if you're new, just get in the car. Right? Like, I didn't ask where we were going. I didn't know nothing. I just got in the car. And I got in the car, and those guys told me their stories, just like I'm doing tonight. And I'm so grateful that Alcoholics Anonymous is a storytelling society. We come here and we tell our stories, right? Because through those guys telling me their story, what happened for me was my alcoholism started to wake up. They talked about alcoholism in a way that I could understand it, in a way that I could hear it. Now, maybe it was just that moment in time that I was supposed to hear it. I know that I walked into God's grace because I heard the message. And that guy, Jack, was like, man, I drink it. And I do cocaine, and I go to the hospital, man. And I was like, huh? I don't go to the hospital, dude. And then the guy, John, was like, oh, yeah, me too, man. I drink, and I go to the hospital, too. And Jack's, oh, really? I go to the hospital all the time, you know? And they're drinking, and they're going to the hospital. And they're drinking, and they're going to the hospital. You know what I mean? And I was like, whoa, bro, I don't go to the hospital. These guys are losers, and I don't want what they have, you know? And before you knew it, I ended up at Charlie Street. And Charlie Street's a low-bottom indigent detox in Costa Mesa, California. Now, Jack knew that I was separating myself from the message, right? He could see me shutting down. He could see the wheels turning. He could see that I wasn't, right? And I walked into Charlie Street, and he put me on a couch, man. And this is how delusional I was, man. I hadn't showered in 6 months, but I'm sitting on the couch, and I'm thinking, man, they need to wash these couches, man. These things stink. And Jack goes, hey, Pete, I got this new guy. Come over here. I got this new guy I want you to meet. And Pete came in. Pete was like tattooed from head to toe. And he came walling on over. And Jack goes, hey, he's like, Pete, this is Pat. Pat, this is Pete. And Pete's like, oh, what's up, Pat? And Jack goes, hey, Pete, when you drink, what happens to you? And Pete goes, well, I go to jail. And I was like, oh, yeah, me too. I go to jail too, you know? And Pete goes, really, what happened? I go, oh, yeah, I went to jail, man. Every time I drink, and I always end up in jail. You know what I'm saying? I don't care no matter where I go, I end up in jail. Pete's like, yeah, me too. This one time I drank, and I went to jail, and I was like, oh, yeah, me too. And then Pete's all, hey, John, come on over. And John grabbed another guy, and Miguel and Brian. All of a sudden, there's like six or seven of us, man, and we're drinking, and we're going to jail. High five, yeah, jail, you know. And I'm so grateful, right, that we tell our war story here. Right, I hear all the time, like, oh, I'm not. We all know how to drink. You know, we all know how to drink. Well, I'm not going to talk about that. We're just going to talk about recovery. That's great. Like, I need to know, right? Like, I need to know that you drink like me. I need to know that you're like me before I hear the message of hope. Because if you're not like me, then why am I going to listen? I just think someone else putting their finger at me. And I was telling my story, man, and all of a sudden I was me tooing. I didn't even know I was me tooing it. I didn't even know I was identifying. I didn't even know that they were getting a hook in me. And that guy, Jack, man, he was a little weasel, man. He came weaseling in. He's like, you know what I mean? He sat on the couch. I didn't even know he was there, you know. And all of a sudden, he popped up. He goes, Pat, when you're in jail, are you sober? I was like, well, I'm sober long enough until I can find the Pruno, you know. And he's like, you're sober in there. I go, yeah, man, it's the only time I could be sober. He goes, really, what happens? I go, well, I don't know. My mom comes and sees me, my good AA mom, you know. She comes and sees me, and I go see my mom, and she's like, you know, Patrick, I really just want you to be sober. And I'm like, I really want to be sober too. Right? Like, I don't want to, like, be in jail. I want to be sober. And I said, Mom, this time I promise I'm going to be sober. And I mean the promise. I mean the promise. Now, I don't know I have alcoholism. I don't know that I need a solution to my alcoholism. I don't know any of nothing of nothing, but I make the promise and I mean it. And I go back to my bunk, and they call for Alcoholics Anonymous, and I go sit with you guys in AA in the little jail, and you guys gave me hope, right? And if you do H&I, keep doing H&I because you gave me hope. I would be in there, and I would think, man, if I get out of here, I'm going to go sit with those good folks one day. And I would go to church, and I'd sit down there in the church, you know what I mean? And they go, anyone want to give their life to Jesus? And I'm not religious, man, but if that's the deal, if that's the ticket, man, I want in. I go up there, you know, I do the deal on the ground. I give it up. I'm like, I'm done. He said, really? He said, yeah, I'm done. I'm good. 30 days in, 45 days in jail. I'm done. I'm not going to drink anymore. I'm going to get my life together. And he's like, oh, wow, okay, great. He said, then what happened? I said, I don't know. All of a sudden, they go, Joe, roll it up. You know what I mean? I roll it up. I give all the homies the commissary, man. I'm out, man. See you later, dog. You know, high-fiving. I go sit there, and they're calling for see if I have any warrants, you know? And I'm like, oh, hopefully they don't have that one in Riverside, you know? And he said, really? What's going on in that holding tank? I said, I don't know. All of a sudden, I start having a conversation with myself. He said, a conversation with yourself? I was like, yeah. He said, well, how did it go? I was like, well, you know what, Pat? Alcohol's not your problem. Just don't do heroin and you'll be all right. So I get out of jail and I go to the 7-Eleven right there in Orange County. There's a 7-Eleven and then there's a donut shop right there. And I call for my ride and I go in there and I get a 12-pack of beer. It's beer. Now, I'm waiting for my ride, and I drink a beer. Now, I don't know it's the first one that gets me drunk. I don't know what alcoholism. I drink it. All of a sudden, it's like, you should probably drink another one. And so I drink another one, and then the thought is, I wonder what they're doing down the street. I take a walk down the street. I meet a new friend. Before you know it, we're business partners. He's like, you're business partners? I'm like, yeah, we got an empire going on here. And he said, what happened? I said, oh, I don't know. All of a sudden, I was arrested again, and I was back in jail. He said, you got put back in jail? I was like, yeah, duh. Don't you go to jail? He goes, no, I go to the hospital. I'm like, yeah, I don't like you. You know what I'm saying? Hey, Pete, remember we go to jail? Pete's like, yeah, I go to jail. You know, I'm like, oh, yeah, we go to jail, you know. And he's like, what happened that time? I said, I don't know. My mom came and saw me. I made the promise. I went to AA. Thanks for doing AA, man. I got hope. I was like, I'm getting out of jail. I mean it, man. This time's going to be different. This time's going to be different, I promise, man. And then they roll it up. I give the homies commissary, man, sitting there calm, waiting for the warrants. Hope they don't have that one in Temecula, you know. And then all of a sudden, I start having a conversation with myself. He said, you had a conversation with yourself, Pat. I said, yeah. He's like, that's a little crazy, but okay. He said, well, the conversation. I said, man, just don't do crack cocaine, Pat, and you'll be all right. You know what I mean? Alcohol's not your problem. Right? And so I get out of jail, I go to the 7-Eleven, I call for my ride, I drink one beer, shame, guilt, remorse goes away. In the middle of the second beer, I go, I wonder what they're doing down the street. Take a walk down the street, meet a new friend, now we're in a motel for like 7 days, solving the world's problems, you know what I mean? And he said, what happened that time? I said, I don't know, I was super paranoid, and I opened the front door, and I was arrested. He goes, you're arrested? I go, yeah, butt naked, and he goes, oh, me too. I got arrested butt naked too, you know. And I was like, really? You know, all right, you know. And what happened was I started to identify my alcoholism, and I didn't even know it, man. They were hooking me right into this thing. I had no idea. And he looked at me and he said, Pat, if you can concede both propositions, physical, that when you put alcohol into your body, you can't stop until you end up in jail. And more importantly, when you're in jail with a sober mind, you have a sober mind that's driving you back to the thing that's going to kill you. He said, you might be alcoholic. And I'm so grateful he left me with me. He laid out the facts about himself. He laid out the facts about the big book, the physical allergy, the mental obsession, right? And I started to identify my alcoholism. And I started to cry. I didn't know it was a surrender. I had no idea. And I looked at him and I said, Jack, I said, I'm alcoholic. It was the greatest gift you guys gave me, was a gift of identification. Because whenever I came to Alcoholics Anonymous and said I was an addict, I separated myself from you every time. I said I was an alcoholic and I didn't have to do what you guys did because I'm not like you. And I said, I'm an alcoholic, man. And the guy lit up like a chandelier. He's like, I got a new guy. You know what I mean? I was like, whoa, you got a new guy. I go, what is a new guy? And sponsor, what does all that mean? I go, you got some money? You know, and he said, I'm not giving you any money, but I want you to do two things. I want you to go to your little room, and I want you to read the big book. And the second thing I want you to do is I want you to take a shower, you know? I thought, man, this guy's crazy. And I went to my little room, and I read the big book. I didn't read the big book. I want you to like me. Like, I'm willing to do whatever it is I think you want me to do in order for you to like me. I don't even know if that's it, but I think it is, and I'll go do it. And my people-pleasing and wanting that guy to like me went to my little room, and I read the big book. Now, I didn't understand a word of it, right? Dr. Bob, Bill Wilson, the old doggerel. What the heck's a doggerel? You know what I mean? Stockbroker. I thought that was a guy at Albertson stocking the shelves of the grocery store. You know what I mean? It was like the Charlie Brown show. Waka, 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 right? But I took my first right action and didn't even know it, you know? And then I went to the shower, you know, to take a shower. And I hadn't showered in a long time, you know? 3 days before I called him that day, on the 20th of October, I crawled out of a motel because in the end, like, my only hustle as a straight man is I'd walk into a gay bar and I'd flirt with enough men to get enough alcohol in my body and hope that I would make it out before I blacked out, you know? I mean, that was the goal, you know what I mean? But I would tend to overshoot the mark, if you know what I'm saying? I'm so grateful that I've learned in Alcoholics Anonymous that if you're laughing, you're identifying, you know what I'm saying? Because I carried a lot of shame in Alcoholics Anonymous for a really long time, you know what I'm saying? Really long time. And I'll get into all that stuff, but I couldn't tell you that story until I had 8 years sober. I didn't tell another man that secret for a long time, right? I mean, I let a little bit out, and he was like, whoa, bro, you know what I mean? And had a year sober, another guy he sponsored, comes up and goes, you're Pat? I go, yeah. He goes, I heard that you did X, Y, and Z. Right? And I went from a year sober, right, with my sponsor telling the little bit of secret to another man. And I went from 1 year to 8 years not trusting another man in this program. Now, I've done enough work to look at it today that he was trying to help that guy who had experience and said, I know someone that has that experience. He could have done it a different way, right, and allowed me to have a little bit of, like, dignity and respect to say yes or no, but this is the way it went down, right? But what happened on the 20th of October, I crawled out of a motel sexually assaulted for the 12th time. And fucking 100% broken. A tremendous amount of shame and a tremendous amount of guilt. The self-hate was just, the terror and the madness was on me. Now, the terror and the madness was on me day in and day out and day in and day out. But that day, like, I knew the truth, right? That day, for the first time, I could not rationalize, justify, minimize my behavior. I knew in that moment that that was the truth. And the only solution that I had was a pint of tequila. The only solution I had always was alcohol. And I went to that liquor store that day, and it was 5:30 in the morning, man. And I don't know what it's like for you at 5:30 in the morning when you can't get a pint of tequila. But for me, the nervous disposition is just ripping right through my skin, man. And the terror is screaming, and the madness is just going crazy, man. I have 30 minutes of just absolute hell, man. I remember that lady when she opened up the door that day, man. That door opened, man, and I got this sense of ease and comfort at once, just knowing that I was going to go get that pint of tequila. And I walked in that liquor store, and I got that pint of tequila, and I took the cap off, man. I said, I'm just going to drink half this tequila, and that's it, man. That's it. And I put that half of that bottle back, man, and I got that sense of ease and comfort at once that the big book talks about. And I sat on that wall outside that liquor store and just took the biggest, deepest breath, man. I was like, it's going to be all right, Pat. It's going to be all right. This time you're going to get a job, man. You can go to school. You're going to make it right with your mom, all the people in your life. It's going to be all right. And all of a sudden, the next thought said that second half of that bottle of tequila would just be good enough. I put that second half of that tequila bottle, man, and I blacked out. And I blacked out for the next 3 days when I came to prostituting myself one more time for one more hit when that guy Jack picked me up that day. And when I walked into that shower that day, man, I was absolutely terrified. And I fell down on the ground in that shower, man, and I just started to cry on that floor of that detox. And I was down there bawling hysterically, man, hating myself, just beating myself down, man. And that guy, Jack, came in that detox that day, and he got down on the floor with me, and he held me down there, man. He pet me on my shoulder like this. He said, kid, it's going to be all right. Kid, it's going to be all right. Kid, it's going to be all right. And I just sat there, and I cried, and that guy held on to me, man. He just held on to me, and he held on to me. And it felt like hours we were down there. It might have been 2 minutes, might have been 30 seconds. I don't know how long it was, but it seemed like a lifetime, man. And something inside of me, man, shifted. I know that the power of God used that servant in Alcoholics Anonymous that day. Because I looked up at that guy and he looked right into my soul, man. He looked right through me and he said, I love you, kid. And I had a little bit of trust for another human being. And he said, I want you to stand up. And I stood up, man. And he said, I want you to take off your shirt. And I took off my shirt. And he said, I want you to take a step in that shower. And I took a step in. He said, take another step in. The guy walked in half the way in that shower and he held me up underneath that water and I shook violently. And I was so terrified to get in that water because the water hurt my skin. The guy took a washcloth and he took a bar of soap and the man scrubbed my back, you know? And the first time in my life, I was 27 years old, I felt love from another human being at 27 for the first time in my life. The same love that I met when I walked into the hospitality room over there, the same love that my friends that I see you there, Myra. My friends that I see, right, that love, right, that I feel was the same love that I got on day one when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous on the 23rd of October of 2002, man. And he said, when you're done in here, there's some clothes in your bedroom on the bed. And I walked in there, man, and he had taken my dirty clothes, man. He threw them away in a bag. And there were some brand new clothes on the bed. I remember putting those brand new clothes on. I remember putting on that brand new pair of socks, man. And if you know what a brand new pair of socks feels like, man, I had a little bit of dignity, man, pride, man. I could stood up for the first time, my shoulders back, man. And I walked downstairs, and that guy looked at me, and he sat down at a table. He had a pack of cigarettes, and he had two big books, and I sat down with him. I said, man, can I get a cigarette? He's like, no problem. And I smoked a cigarette, and he read the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, word for word and line for line. I said, can I get another cigarette? He's like, yeah, no problem. And he just kept reading. He kept reading, and I kept smoking. He kept reading, and I kept smoking. I wasn't there for the reading. I wanted the cigarettes, you know? But what happened for me was he got to We Agnostics, right? And he's like, do you believe in God? And I was like, what, huh? The G-O-D? I knew instantly the G-O-D was that religious dude, you know what I mean? And I was like, absolutely not. Like, if this is a God deal, like, I'm done, right? Like, I thought you guys were going to have me sell, like, you know, literature door to door, you know what I mean? You know, here's a bobblehead of Bill Wilson and Dr. Bob. I was like, nah, I'm good, dog. I'm out. You know what I mean? I'd rather go live on Skid Row than do that God deal, you know? And Man, he switched the conversation on me. He didn't talk about God. He talked about the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, giving him a tremendous amount of joy when he walked his daughter down the aisle. He talked about the happiness that he felt when he watched his grandson hit the first ball at T-ball. And he talked about Alcoholics Anonymous and the 12 steps giving him joy and happiness for others. And I came to believe that if I did the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, that I would have joy and happiness for another person in my life sometime. And he talked about this decision that I needed to make, that I needed to follow someone else's direction because my thinking was the problem. And I made a decision in that moment to do what this guy told me to do. And that was it. He said, "Oh, this is great, man. 1, 2, and 3 done, this is awesome, you know. And here's a pad of paper and here's a pen, and you're going to start writing inventory day one." He said, "I'll be back in a couple hours. You just keep writing." And so I didn't write. I went off to the couch, because I don't want to write anymore. He's not paying attention, And I went onto the couch and I was smoking cigarettes with this old drunk, just a good old drunk, old guy, street guy, man. And we're sitting there smoking cigarettes and we're talking, and all of a sudden the dude just seized up, man, and went down the ground and was flopping like a fish. And I was like, "Oh my God, what do I do?" And the guy died right there in front of me. And in that moment, man, I came to realize that that was me. I wasn't any different than that man. I wasn't any different from my sponsor. I wasn't any different than anyone else in that detox. I was one amongst many. And that guy Jack came back, and I started writing inventory, and I did my fifth step with that guy. He talked about this spiritual malady that I had. He talked about the nervous disposition that I have. And I started to tell him in my fifth step when I was a little kid that I told him in my fifth step that I was a bedwetter. He said, "You're a bedwetter?" I said, "Yeah, I'm a bedwetter." I remember when I was a little kid, I told him that I was a right fielder on the baseball team. Any other right fielders here? Yeah. I'm with my peeps, dog, you know what I mean? But we weren't saying, "Oh yeah, right field, dog," you know what I mean? It was the loser position, you know what I mean? Right? Little league, right? There's two team captains, right? And there's like everyone gets picked. "I'll take Joe, I'll take Fred, I'll grab Bob," and there's two of us left, and I guess I'll take Pat. I'm a right fielder on the base. Man, loser, I probably would have been diagnosed with ADD, I don't know, a squirrel, I'm in left field looking for the dandelion. Somebody told me if I blew off all those things, I can have a wish, Coach is yelling at me, "The other side of the field, kid," I'm just absolutely just loser, I'm a strikeout kind of kid, you don't want like ninth inning, bases loaded, two outs, Pat's up, Coach is like, "Oh, God." Because it's serious in Little League, It's like, "We got to win the state championship." I'm 11, dude, one time I was on second base. I don't even know how I got there. I was terrified. I was like, "Oh, my God." I was already self-obsessed at 9. I didn't know if I had the right cleats, the right belt. Did I wear the right jersey? I was like, "Oh, what the heck's going on?" I don't even know how I got there. Kid cracked a line drive, and I ran back to first base. Dude, it was like a triple play in the wrong direction, Dude, poopy pants back to the dugout. My friends are running out of the dugout that day. And what I heard them say is, "You're a failure, you're a loser, and you're no good," Now, none of them said that, right? But that was the voice in my head. And I learned this stuff by doing my fifth step with my sponsor. I didn't know this, right? I didn't know that I was awkward and weird. I knew something was wrong. I knew that when I put alcohol into my body, it gave me the level of courage, right, to live this thing called life. But when I'm telling him my inventory, man, I told him this stuff, right, that I got the triple play in the wrong direction, And I told him that I was resentful at my mom, right, because she was standing up clapping. Oh, I'm like, "I just got the triple play in the wrong direction. You're not supposed to be clapping." And I was embarrassed, And I was resentful at her for that. And I remember telling him that when I looked at my mom that day and I said, "Mom, if I only had a dad, that would have never happened." Because my mom was a blackout drinker. My mom didn't even know she was pregnant till she came in labor, right? She was in her apartment. And she gave birth, and the paramedic was holding me. She's like, you need to name him. And my mom was such a drunk that she named me Patrick after her name, which was Patty, so she didn't want to forget my name. And I can laugh at it today, and we know the madness. We understand the thinking in Alcoholics Anonymous. But as a little kid, man, I hated my mom. As a little kid, I hated my mom that I didn't have a dad, you know? I remember sitting up outside my window wondering if my dad was ever going to come home. And my dad would come, I'd see a car come down and make a right-hand turn, and my dad would never come home. And as a little kid, I thought, man, if my dad doesn't love me, then God doesn't love me. And I learned this stuff by telling my sponsor these things, right? I built a belief system that was going to separate me from you. I didn't have any idea. And I write the inventory with the sponsor. And day four, I was already making amends. I was already on my ninth step at 4 days sober. And he's like, you got to do a sober living. I was like, oh, no, I got to go to the Salvation Army. He goes, why do you got to go to the Salvation Army? Because I have a warrant. And I go, oh, this is great. You're on your ninth step. You're going to go turn yourself in, you know? I was like, whoa, bro, no. I'm not that sober yet. He's like, no, you got God in your life, and if you do the right thing, you know, spiritual principles, you know. No, bro, you have spiritual principles. I ain't doing this, you know what I mean? I told him, I was like, dude, the last time I went to court, man, the judge told me I was doing 3.5 years if he saw me again. Like, I'm going to do 3.5 years if I go see him. He's like, everything's going to be all right. I go, I don't believe in God. Remember, he goes, you can borrow mine. He goes, be ready at 7 tomorrow morning. You know, I want him to like me. So guess what? I was ready at 7 in the morning. And he looked at me, he goes, you're going to court in that? I go, I don't have anything else. He goes, here's a suit. Put this thing on. I put the suit on, and I went down to the court, man, and I was sitting there, and judge goes, Mr. Ochoa. I said, oh, yes, sir. Come on up. And I'm standing down there, and I'm standing there in my suit. Yes, sir. He said, do you remember the last time you were in my courtroom, I told you I was going to sentence you to 3.5 years in prison? I said, yes, sir. He said, I wasn't lying, and he closed the book up. He said, cuff him up, you know, and the guard came and cuffed me up. And he took me down to the holding tank. Now, I have an old-timer named John Ackerlin who told me, and he was a real smart guy, that he said to me, he goes, you need to pray every day. I go, how am I going to pray? I don't believe in God. He goes, you just say this prayer. God, I don't believe that you exist, but there's this old guy in my meeting that says I have to pray anyway. And then just tell God your problems, like if you believe. And so I got down that holding that tank that day, and I was like, God, I don't believe that you exist, but John, this old guy, told me I had to pray. Get me the heck out of here. You know what I mean? Amen. And, and I was getting on the bus to go to prison, and I'm getting shackled up to the next guy, and everybody goes in, and I'm about to step on the bus, and the guard goes, Mr. Ochoa? I said, yes. I don't know what's going on, but the judge wants to see you one more time. I said, oh, okay, yeah, get me out of here. Let's go, you know. And I go up there, and I sit in front of the judge, and the judge says, Mr. Ochoa, I said, yeah. He goes, I don't know why I'm doing this, but I'm going to give you another chance. He said, there's a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and he pointed over here, and I looked, and my goofy sponsor had been sitting in that courtroom all day fighting for me to get out. And he said, there's a bed available for you at the Salvation Army. It was a Tuesday afternoon, and the Salvation Army in Anaheim only lets you in Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, and you have to be there at like 5:30 in the morning to stand in line. And it was a Tuesday afternoon, and, you know, my sponsor had been calling the Salvation Army. He was a headhunter. That's what he did for work. And his liability, or what we, you know, anyways, his asset, man, came in handy because he called the Salvation Army like nonstop. You know what I mean? No one answered. And this guy, he was a counselor there, and he wasn't supposed to go in the printer room, but he had to get these things printed, you know. And so he decided to go in there anyways, and the phone rang, and he wasn't supposed to be there, so he wasn't supposed to answer the phone, but something inside of him told him to answer it, and he answered it. My sponsor said, I got this kid, Pat Ochoa, who needs a bed. And when I walked into the Salvation Army, I was met by a man by the name of Tim. And Tim was the man that answered the phone that day, and Tim was a guy I used to get loaded with. And Tim had gotten sober, and Tim had become a drug and alcohol counselor, and Tim wasn't supposed to answer the phone that day. And see, God was working in my life long before I could see God working in my life. But I'll tell you what, I chalked that up as a coincidence. And my sponsor came every Sunday to see me. And about 100 days in, I was like, man, this Salvation Army, man, this is a... They make you work for free. $3 a week gratuity for 50 hours of work. I know what they're doing here. I got a bright idea. I said, I'm out of here. Now, the judge just released me to the Salvation Army on this deal, right? And this, I went and told him what I did with this deal, and I showed up to the court to tell him what I did with the deal he gave me. I said, I got this better place down here in Laguna Beach, and I got a job managing a restaurant. I'm doing good. He said, I'm glad that you're doing good in Alcoholics Anonymous. He said, but we're getting a violation of probation, and you're going to go do 90 days in jail. And I remember getting cuffed up, going to jail, and for the first time in my life, I felt freedom. Now I'm going to jail, locked up, and I'm feeling freedom. Because I knew that if I did Alcoholics Anonymous and I finished this 90-day deal, that I wasn't going to ever have to go back to jail as long as I did what you guys told me to do in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I got to jail that day, man, and I got a big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, 100 Days Sober, and I started studying that book like my life depended upon it. And I started to underline, I started to look at the things I related, and I'd call my sponsor, and I would talk to him about the big book, you know. And H and I would come, and I would participate in the meeting rather than sit there and get hope. I would participate, and I would share, and I would go to church, and they're offering me Pruno, and they're offering me these little speed papers and weed, you know, and I'm like, no thanks, you know what I mean, no thanks, you know, no thanks. And then one guy looked at me and goes, are you a rat or something? And I was like, well, actually, like, I'm, you know, 100 and something days sober in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I sat these seven guys down, and I told them my story. Now, they had nowhere to go, so they had to listen, you know. And I got done telling them my story, and the guy looks at me. He's like, yeah, you're right. We don't want to give you any, you know. And this guy heard my story that day, and he came up to me, and he said, Pat, he's like, dude, I don't know what's going on. He's like, dude, I'm looking at 10 years in prison, man. I don't want to go to prison. I want to get sober, but I don't know what to do. And I shared my experience with him. I said, man, when I was in your situation, I told the judge that I was an alcoholic and a drug addict, and I needed help, and he gave me a program. I said, maybe if you go to court and tell him that, maybe he'll give you a program. I don't know, but it's worth a shot. And the next day, that guy went to court, and I played chess and did what I did. And that guy came back, man, and he was crying. And he looked at me and he said, Pat, they're going to give me a program. And he said, but I don't know how to stay sober. And you're staying sober in this place, man. And what I did was I got the big book. And I started to read word for word and line for line, just like my sponsor had done for me. And we talked about God, and he was a religious guy. And I said, man, your God is much bigger than mine because I really have a hard time with God. And he was talking to me about his relationship with God. And I said, you want to do a third step prayer? And he said, yeah, I'll do it. But can we wait till 3 a.m. when no one's looking, you know? He came and woke me up, man. And we got down to the institution on our knees, and we said the third step prayer together. And a couple days later, man, I got released, and then he got released. He went to the Salvation Army, and I got on the bus, and I drove 2.5 hours on the bus to go see that guy every Sunday like my sponsor had done for me. I hear all the time, I was sponsoring that guy with 100 days sober. All I knew was what was in the big book. All I had was my experience up until that point, and I shared it with that guy. And that guy went out, and that guy got loaded. I showed up one day, 2.5 hour bus ride. I get there, the guy left. He got loaded. You know, I'm thinking it's all about me. What, I drove 2.5 hours on the bus, you know what I mean? Couldn't you at least call and tell me? You know, in my head, I'm thinking that, you know? And I call my sponsor. He made some smart sponsor, you know, quote or something, you know? But what I came to find out was that guy saved my life in that institution. Because what I came to learn and I came to believe that one alcoholic working with another alcoholic allowed me to stay sober one day at a time at an institution. Man, I caught fire for Alcoholics Anonymous. Man, I was on fire. Man, I was like, I got sponsees all the place, man. Someone's like, you need to join YPA. You know, I'm like, I ain't doing no YPA. What the heck is YPA? Is that like the, you know, I thought they were going to do something, you know, I don't know. So they invited me to this Orange County thing, and I show up, man, and they this is what they told me. They go, yes, this guy over there, he's talking crap on about your mom, you know what I mean? So I got like 10 sponsees. We're going to go beat this guy up, and we rolled in there, and they had this literature commitment, and I was always taught to say yes, right? So I raised my hand. I said, I'll be the literature guy. Oh, I didn't know what next thing you know, they gave me the literature thing, and I don't have a computer. I thought maybe set the literature up or something, but you got to make flyers and stuff. I don't know how to do this, but I don't know. Next thing you know, I was on this YPOC committee, you know, and I met some friends that are in the room. Doug, I don't know if you're here, but I saw you, and Myra, and Miguel, and Brian. Dude, we just had a ton of fun, man. It was like, dude, just like loving Alcoholics Anonymous, traveling the world, you know, and... Dude, AA boy met AA girl on AA campus, and what happened at a YPAW event in Vegas didn't stay in Vegas because she got pregnant. You know what I mean? And now we don't even. She loved me, I guess. That's what she says. But I'm like, dude, I'm terrified. You know what I mean? I'm like, I don't know how to have a relationship, man, with myself. You know, let alone someone else. You know, I was like, well, I'm gonna be a dad. You know, long story short, man, what happened was I left the relationship because I was scared, and I ended up, you know, sleeping with someone else in the same home group, and that's not good, you know, and and it was her friend, and that's not even good, you know, and all bad, you know what I'm saying? I love the laughter in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know? Because we get it, you know what I'm saying? Like, dude, I sat in the home group. My sponsor said, you're not going to F your way out of AA, too. You've done that everywhere. You're going to sit in your same seat week after week, you know? And she sat there, and it was like, oh, my God, it was gnarly, you know? And we went to therapy every week, you know, for 9 months while she was pregnant, 6 months after, because I'm doing the right thing, right? I didn't want to do that. Like, I didn't want to act out like that, man. I was terrified of I didn't know how to do relationship, man. I didn't, and long story short, that relationship ended, you know, but prior to, like, I didn't know how to be a dad, you know, like, I don't have a dad, like, how am I going to be a dad, and for the first 6 months of that kid's life, like, I took care of him, because I was going to school, and she worked, and I didn't, man, I'm so grateful for the women, because you guys would talk about, like, the father of your child not showing up for visit, and through your pain, I learned how to show up for my son. You would share your pain about the father of your child not paying child support. And I learned through your pain how to be financially responsible for my kid. And I would call you. I'm like, oh, my God, he has the hiccups. What do I do? They're like, what do you do when you have hiccups? I'm like, I don't know. Wait. They're like, perfect, you know, and hang up on me. But one day he cried, and I was like, oh, my God, what do I do? He cried. I can't deal with these emotions, you know what I'm saying? And I put him on my head, and he stopped crying. I was like, hey, you did a good job. You know what I mean? So we just cruised around all the time like that. I didn't want him to cry, you know? Dude, and I was at my apartment, and my sponsor was there. And my sponsor was big on service, man. I go, why do I have to be a service? And he's like, because you're selfish and you're self-centered. That's why, you know? And he's like, one day through service, you're going to care about another human being. Oh, whoopee, yay, great, you know? But I was at my house that day, and I stood up, and I put my son on my head like I always did, and I put his head right into a ceiling fan. It was like, whack, 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 you know. That's what I did. I was like, oh, my God. You know what I mean? My sponsee grabbed my kid, and I went to the back room, and I got on my knees. I'm like, God, I don't believe that you exist, but this old guy John told me to pray. And I just put my son's head in a ceiling fan. And I don't know what to do. And I heard a voice in the closet that said, I don't know why you're talking to me. You need to call the doctor, dude, you know. I was like, whoa, bro. And I call the doctor. I'm like, doctor, I put my son's head in the ceiling fan. I don't know what to do. And he told me some things to do. And I go, okay, thanks. And I went and I grabbed my kid and I looked at all the things. And he was absolutely perfect. There was nothing. Well, he had a little bruise on his head. But what happened for me was I cared more about another human being than I cared about myself in that moment. That guy didn't lie to me, man. He told me that I was going to care about another human being more than myself. And in that moment, that happened to me. And what happened for me was I started to come to believe in God. I didn't know that it was God, right? I was coming to believe more in you guys and the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and the principles. I can look at my story now and see that I was starting to come to believe in God. And my behavior with my son's mom, we ended up, that relationship didn't work out. And I got another relationship and I did the same behavior, and I got another relationship and I did the same behavior. And I would go home every night and want to put a bullet in my mouth. I thought that I was doing something wrong in Alcoholics Anonymous, right? I had the sponsees and I had the service commitments and I had all these things, and I'm doing everything that I'm supposed to be doing, and I don't understand what's wrong with me. I think that there's something wrong with me, and all I want to do is kill myself, right? But I continue to show up to Alcoholics Anonymous, and at 8 years sober, I said, F this, I'm not doing this anymore, man. And I'm going to barrel my car into these oncoming traffic, man. I'm done. And I said, when I get to 100 miles an hour, I'm done. And my car was at 98, and there was enough cars, and I went to barrel my car, and I heard a voice in my car that said, you need to call that guy Jonathan from your Tuesday night meeting before you kill yourself. And I looked in the back seat, man, there wasn't anyone in there, you know? And I called this guy, and he'd been saying some things that I was listening to, and I called him. It was midnight. He was laying in bed with his wife. His two kids were laying in the bedroom next to him, right? It was midnight, and the guy answered in one ring. And I said, John, I'm going to kill myself. I can't do this anymore. And when I slowed down, he said, man, I've been waiting for this call for a year. And he said, you want to meet me at Denny's? I said, I'll meet you there. And I went to hang up, and he said, no, I'm going to stay on the phone with you until you get there. Because he knew that I wasn't going to show up. And he stayed on the phone with me, and he got out of bed with his wife, and he drove 30 miles south, and we walked into Denny's, and he opened the big book to page 52. And he talked about having trouble with personal relationships, couldn't control his emotional nature, prey to misery and depression, right? And all these things, couldn't make a living. And he looked at me and he said, I'm going to add one more. He said, I would bet a lot of money that you're having bad relationship sex problems. And I thought, man, how did he know? And he looked at me and he said, what you think is a broken relationship, he said, what you're suffering from is untreated alcoholism. And he talked about having 17 years sober, doing the same thing, wanting to put a bullet in his mouth, when he reached out to a man by the name of Luther Wood. And Luther Wood, being suicidal, reached out to a man by the name of Clint Hodges. And Clint Hodges, being suicidal, reaching out to a man by the name of Don Pritz. And in that line of people with long-time sobriety, suicidal in the rooms, what happened for me, man, was I got hope. One more time, I identified with another human being, and these guys were happy, joyous, and free. And I went back through the steps with this guy, and I was suicidal from 8 years till I was 10 years sober. And I looked at the prejudices I had towards God, and I set them aside, and I looked at what God was for me. And what I came to believe was that God was love. What I came to believe was that I had an intuitive thought my whole life, and though I always went right. I came to believe that God was in me and that God was in you and that we were connected in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, right? The magic happens in this room. I come here tonight and I look into the eyes of God on a daily basis, right? I come to look at you guys and you guys give me the evidence. You guys share your story and identify my story, and I get to see the evidence in my own life. And he looked at me and he said, what are the things that are blocking you from God? And I said, the thing that's blocking me from God is what you guys in Alcoholics Anonymous think of me. I wanted to come here and I wanted to impress you. The more sponsees I had, the more service work I had, right? You guys would say, look at Pat, right? I got this guy, Pat can help. That little boy on the field that said, if I only had a dad, right, that wouldn't happen to me. I had this old idea that was separating me from you. And he said, I want you to say this simple prayer. God, please take away this thing that stands in the way of me having a better relationship with you. And for months, man, I argued with God, and I argued with God, and I argued with God. I can't do it. I can't do it. I can't do it. And I call my sponsor. I'm like, I'm going to kill myself. And he'd say, son, he started to be a father figure in my life. He said, son, he said, will you meet me at the meeting tomorrow? Because I'd like to say goodbye to you before you kill yourself. I said, I'll meet you there tomorrow. I'll meet you there tomorrow to say goodbye, but I'm done. And the next day I showed up and I went to go say goodbye to my sponsor, and he kissed me on the forehead, because he always did. He kissed me on the forehead. He said, I love you like a son. He said, I hope I see you at the meeting tomorrow. I said, I'll see you tomorrow. And then I thought, man, what did I just say? You know what I mean? And I showed up the next day, and I would call him on the cliff. I'm going to jump. And he'd say, meet me at the meeting tomorrow, because I'd like to say goodbye. You know, okay. But every day he would say, how's it amends to your dad coming along? I'm like, I'm not going to make it, dude. You know what I mean? I'm not making that amends. And he'd say, I'll see you at the meeting tomorrow. And I'm going to kill myself. How's the amends? I'm not going to do it. And so finally I was like, dude, don't call the sponsor, man. He's going to tell you to meet him at the meeting. You know what I'm saying? And so I pulled my car over on the bridge in Santa Ana. It's the 57 that goes over the 5. And I said, I'm not going to call the sponsor, but what I said, God, you have 10 seconds. God, you have 10 seconds. For the first time in my life, I went to a dependence upon God rather than a dependence on sponsor. And I got out of the car and my phone rang. And I looked at the phone. It was an unknown number, and I don't answer unknown numbers. But I answered it that day, and I said, hello, this is Pat. And this kid on the other line said, Pat, this is Chris. And I wanted to call and thank you, because when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, you saved my life. I said, but I'm leaving. He said, I'm leaving Alcoholics Anonymous because I'm going to go get loaded, and I wanted to say goodbye to you. And I said, Chris, there's a meeting starting in 30 minutes at the Canyon Club. I said, will you meet me there? Because I'd like to say goodbye to you before you kill yourself. And Chris said, I'll meet you there, but after that, I'm going to go get loaded. And I said, perfect. And I got in my car, and I drove 30 miles south to the Canyon Club. And I walked into the door of the Canyon Club, and there was Chris. And Chris was crying, and Chris looked at me and said, I want to thank you one more time because you saved my life. And then he asked me to be his sponsor, and I said, I'd love to be your sponsor, you know. Now, I didn't tell him I was about to kill myself when he called me. I just said, I'd love to be your sponsor, you know what I mean? And I went home that night, and I was arguing with God, F you, God, I can't believe you put another schlep in my life to help. You know what I mean? All I want to do is die, you know what I mean? Die, you know. And I felt a hand on my shoulder. It's the best way I can describe it. It was a force that pushed me off the couch. And I was in the fetal position on the floor crying. Woo-hoo! And all of a sudden, I started to make amends to a man I never met. The words started coming out of my mouth. Now, where I haven't been selfish and self-centered in that relationship, I don't have a part in that relationship. My mom got pregnant in a blackout. But I had used that man in every relationship with you. That little boy on the playground that said, if I only had a dad, that had never happened. If I only had a dad, I'd know how to be a boyfriend to you. If I only had a dad, I'd know how to be a father. If I only had a dad, I'd know how to be an employee. If I only had a dad. And what happened for me in the moment was the victim was pulled out and the power of God, which was love, went deep down within. The big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, man, I'm so grateful for the 10-step promise. I got up, I went to my bed, and what happened for me was I had entered the world of the Spirit. And I haven't had to act out in that behavior since the day I called that man until I got here tonight. I can tell you that I live a life beyond any comprehension that I can even come up with. And I continue to say yes in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm trying to figure out how I'm going to close this thing because I don't like to talk about the death of my mom. It's a lot of emotions. I don't know if I'm going to go there tonight. I've really avoided it all the way up until now, if I'm just being honest. So I'm going to end on a story with my son. My son's like my best, my road dog. You know what I mean? We just got back from London together on Tuesday, and you know what I mean? He knows Alcoholics Anonymous is first in my life. We went to London because of Alcoholics Anonymous, and he knew exactly. He said, Dad, that's where you need to be. He comes with me tonight. We'll go to Vegas after this to ride our bikes, right? Like I live a full life. And, you know, but I didn't know how to be a dad, right? But I apply the principles in my home. And I went to go speak in Portland, Oregon. Let me back up, actually. My son, when he was in second grade, he was terrified. He was like, he got scared. I don't know what happened. I dropped him off at his mom's. Now, because of the 9-step amends, me and his mom are dearest of friends. Dearest of friends. One of her ex-boyfriends is here tonight. You know what I mean? Like, we're good, you know? And only in AA. It's very incestual around here. You know what I'm saying? And But I dropped him off and I went to go get him the next day. No, I dropped him off and then I went to go to Valentine's Day to bring him a gift. I surprised him and I walked in. It was like pitch black. He was sitting in front of a screen and I was like, bro, what's up? You know, and he didn't know where his mom was. He was just disoriented. And I took him to dinner and he ordered his food and the food came and he just started to cry. And I was like, what's wrong, dude? He's like, I don't know, man. I'm afraid that if I eat, I'm going to choke. And if I choke, I'm going to die. Now, I get afraid. If you don't eat, like, you're going to die, you know? And so I'm like, dude, you got to eat, you know what I mean? And, rah, rah, and I'm freaking out. My anxiety's going, and he doesn't eat that day, and the next day he's afraid to eat. 3 days in, man, I'm, like, freaking out. And all of a sudden, I had this intuitive thought that said, why don't you pray with your kid? And I said, Eden, I said, you want to pray? And he goes, yeah, let's, okay. And he held my hands, and we said a prayer. And all of a sudden, I had an intuitive thought that said, why don't you feed him some softer food? So I gave him some yogurt. Next thing you know, he started eating turkey, you know, a little slice of turkey. Next thing you know, he's eating fine. And then all of a sudden, we go to put him to bed, and he's afraid he's going to die in his sleep. I go, what do you mean you're going to die? And he's like, man, I'm afraid if I die in my sleep, I'm not going to be able to say goodbye to you, Dad. Now, I don't hear goodbye to you, Dad. I hear not listening to me, not sleeping, probably manipulating. And now I'm like, dude, you got to go to bed. You know what I mean? Like, that's going to help him go to sleep, you know? And my anxiety's going, and he doesn't sleep that day, doesn't sleep. And all of a sudden, I have an intuitive thought that says, why don't you pray with your kid? Oh, wow, great, yeah. So you want to pray? He goes, yeah. So we hold, you know, he prays. And all of a sudden, I have an intuitive thought that says, why don't you read a book with him? And so I read a book with him, and he falls asleep in my chest. And, a couple days later, I go to drop him off at school, and he starts to cry. I'm like, what now? He goes, I'm afraid that I'm going to go to school, and I'm going to die at school, and I'm not going to be. And I'm like, I have enough experience, right? Faith for me is a confident trust born of experience. I have two experiences prior to show that pray with your kid is better than the anxiety and the chaos that you're creating in his life. And so we say a prayer together, and I have an intuitive thought, and I go, Eden, do you know any kids at school that don't have friends, you know, the ones that are kind of lurking around? I said, yeah. I go, you think it could be a service to them today? He goes, well, I think so. I go, okay, why don't you try to find someone to be of service at school today to help you get through the fear? He goes, okay. And he went to school and I went to work and I totally forgot about it, but he didn't. And I went to go pick him up and he was so excited to tell his dad. I go, what happened? He goes, man, you won't believe it. He said, I was at school and there was a kid in the grass way out there. And I went out there to go meet the kid and I put my hand out to him and he was crying. And I said, what's wrong? And he said that the kid had just found out that morning that his parents were getting a divorce and he was going to have to spend time at his parents' mom's half time and his dad's half time. And my son had been living that way for 8 years at that point. And he said, I was able to tell him how I get through it. And my son learned how to walk through his fear through the principles that we learn here in Alcoholics Anonymous through prayer and service. And I went to Portland, Oregon, and I was speaking, and I came back Sunday night, and I go to pick him up, and I'm restless, irritable, and discontent, and I pick him up, and I'm cranky. And he looks at me, he goes, Dad, he's like, did you forget to pray? He said, let's say a prayer, Dad, you know. And he held my hand, and he said a prayer. And we went and got food, and we showed up to my apartment complex, and we go to get out of the car, and all of a sudden, this girl is screaming in my apartment complex, this effing, rah, 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 screaming. She's punching car windows, and I say a prayer to myself. I go, God, I don't know what you want me to do, but give me the guidance and the strength to do what you want me to do. And she came walking right up to me, and she had a knife in her hand, and she had cut her arms all up and down. And I had just told my son right before she got there to go inside to separate the food for us. And I got the knife out of her hand, and I said, God, I don't know what you want me to do, but give me the next direction. And she said, my boyfriend took my phone, and I need to call my dad. Can I use your phone? And God answered my prayer. I knew what to do, and I gave her the phone. And she's talking to her dad, and I go, God, give me the next direction that I need to take. And she said, my dad wants to talk to you. We talked to him, and I got on the phone, and God told me what to do. And I said, hello. And he said, I don't know who you are. He said, but I'm an hour and a half away. I'm terrified that my daughter is going to kill herself or get hurt. He said, will you take her into your house and just watch her until I get there? And God answered my prayer. I knew exactly what to do, and I took her inside, and I took her to my bathroom, and I cleaned off her arms for her. And I said, I'll be right back. And I walked over to my son to see how he was doing, and he had separated the food in three plates. And he said, Dad, he said, you think she wants to eat? I said, I don't know. Why don't you go ask her? And he walked over to her, and she was crying, and I peeped my head around the corner to look, and he goes, every time I'm sad, I pray. He said, will you pray with me? And he held her hands, and he said a prayer for her, and I just started to cry. I started to cry because of how grateful I was for Alcoholics Anonymous, for what you have taught me, that I took that in the home, and that little boy was applying it to his life. And I sat there, and I watched him, and he goes, every time I'm done praying, he said, I meditate. You want to meditate with me? I mean, she had nowhere to go. She had to sit there, you know what I mean? And he's like, breathe God in, breathe fear out, breathe God in, breathe fear out, man. And I'm just sitting there crying, dude, you know what I mean? And he came over to the table, and we sat down there to eat our food, and we said a prayer. And he said, God, thank you for bringing this girl into our life so that we can help her. And the phone rang, and it was her dad. And I said, I'll be right back. He goes, I want to go with you. Now, this is my timid little boy, right? The kid that was scared, right? And we walk out, and this like 64 Impala, man, like 8 cholos come rolling out, tattoos up and down their face. Dad was like 7 foot tall. He wasn't that. It's an exaggeration, you know? And my son walks right up to him and goes, hi, my name's Eden. And he goes, we believe that God brought your daughter in our lives so we could be of service to her. And we want to thank God, and we want to thank you for trusting us. And he walked off to go home, and I wanted to ask that little boy to be my sponsor. You know what I mean? Man, if you're new here tonight, Alcoholics Anonymous is a lot more than just not drinking, man. Alcoholics Anonymous is a process of growing up. And I hope that I shared a little bit about growing up with you tonight. I want to thank you for having that 3-year commitment, brother. And I love you all. Thank you.